before. It's a great, the coaching library she has is fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Welcome. Who just joined?
Dwayne Wade.
Dwayne, it's Tom. How are you?
Hello, Tom.
Margie Tyler.
Hi, Margie, it's Susie. I'm back. I just started the recording, everybody. So I just want to officially welcome everybody. This is Susie Pomerantz. I'm the founder of the Leading Coaches Center. And I want to welcome everybody to the Leading Coaches Center Mastermind call today. I'm so delighted that you're here because, as we were just talking about before we got started, this is lunchtime here on the East Coast. So for those of you that are joining us at this virtual lunch table, welcome. For those of you that are calling in from other time zones and you're not eating lunch, welcome as well. And I wanted to just share a few little housekeeping tidbits before we ask you to check in and say hello and tell us your name and where you're calling in from, et cetera. So just first of all, if you wish to mute yourself during the call, it's *6 to mute and *6 to unmute when you want to talk. That's an important part because Tom will be asking for input at a couple of points during the call. So remember, if you have muted yourself, to unmute so we can hear you again. And we're going to do something slightly different on this call. Normally on the Mastermind call, we are on the Leading Coaches Center Facebook page at the same time. So I will be posting things there throughout the call. Right now what's posted there is where you can access Tom's book. And so if you go to Facebook and open Leading Coaches Center, you'll see our wall there, and I'm just now posting a link where you can go to find the slides for today's call. So Tom has created a few PowerPoint slides that are posted on the Leading Coaches Center, and I just put that link up on the Facebook page so you can follow along with the slides for today's call too. And I recommend just if you have a way on your computer to have two windows of your browser open side by side. That's the way I'm doing it. So I've got the Facebook page on one side and the Leading Coaches Center page on the other side with Tom's slides open. And we are recording this call, as you've heard. The recording will be posted in the Leaders Clubhouse in the Mastermind Live section after the call, and I will post the link to that in the Leading Coaches Center as well. I have to say that I will give a more formal introduction for Tom in a few minutes after we've checked in, but I've known Tom for 6 years. We first met through a mutual friend, and we were book buddies early on when we were both writing our books and supporting each other in the process of writing the books. And I've learned so much from Tom over the years about diversity and about multicultural awareness, which is actually saying a lot that I've learned a lot from him, because prior to being a coach, you know, I do coach globally, of course, and I used to actually be a trainer, a corporate trainer, doing diversity training. So I considered myself pretty knowledgeable, and I've learned so much from Tom. So I'm delighted, Tom, that you're here with us. And we now have 413 members in the Leading Coaches Center, so I'm delighted that those of you that are here today are here, and I'd love to give you a chance now to check in, say hello, tell us your name, where you're calling in from, and if you want to share with us your coaching specialty or something that you're working on now that you're excited about. Let's do a quick run around the room to see who's here, and then I will formally introduce Tom. So who would like to say hello first?
Hi, this is Margaret Carey. I got on a little early, and I live and work in Washington, D.C., and I coach and train exclusively physicians.
Yay. Thanks for being here. And who else is here?
Hi, this is Fred Bunsa. I work in New Jersey.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Fred.
Dwayne Wade. I work in Birmingham, Alabama, in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Wow, great.
Margie Heiler, Northern Virginia. I coach leaders, executives, and teams. And also, I'm on the faculty of Adler, and so I train coaches.
Thank you. Who else wants to say hello? Let us know you're here. And if you've muted, you have to unmute to say hello so we can hear you. Star 6 to mute and unmute. Okay, is that all our check-ins? Anyone else want to say hello? Hi, welcome to the call. Who just joined us?
Bill Woodson.
Welcome.
Oh.
So we're just doing a quick check-in, name, location, and coaching specialty if you wish to share it. Anyone else want to say hello and check in?
Well, I'm Bill Woodson. I'm in New York, and the coaching I would put in the category of management coaching and executive coaching that I've done.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, Tom. How are you? Fancy meeting you here.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and introduce Tom and turn it over to him. So, as I said before, Tom and I have known each other for 6 years now, which we were chuckling about prior to the call because neither one of us would have imagined that it had been that long. Tom is in his 28th year of performance improvement consulting, and his coaching always has an eye toward how his coaching customer is affected by larger human and organizational systems. Currently, he and his business partner offer a method called Lifeline for developing leaders who are under heavy pressure and overload. He's a proud graduate of Brown University, where his claim to fame is that he did sports radio announcing of Brown games with Chris Berman of ESPN. And his customers have included the Weather Channel, AOL, Verizon, the Argentine Education Ministry, and NASCAR, where his claim to fame was that a bridge connecting to the racetrack collapsed just after he passed by it. He's worked in 7 Latin American countries. He's lived overseas. But his claim to cultural fame is really that he is from New Jersey. That heritage is definitely part of the inspiration for his book, Are You Clueless? And the book's lessons will be embedded in today's exchange on coaching and cultural competence. And if you want more information on New Jersey, please consult Tom after the call. We are on Facebook Live on the Leading Coaches Center page, where I've posted the link to where you can link over and get the slides for today's call, so you can follow along the slides with Tom. And, Tom, thank you for being here with us.
You're welcome, Susie. And to all those who are out there who may have been touched by Susie's help, I just want to thank her for all the backup that she's done and also inviting me to come on this call. She is such a great supporter, and those of you who know her know that just as well as I do. So thanks, Susie.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have 35 folks signed up, so we may have some people who haven't introduced. Is there anybody else that would like to introduce themselves? We're having people say who you are, where you're from, and what your coaching specialty is. I think we have at least one other person join.
Hi, this is Captain Santana Goldman from San Francisco, and my specialty is coaching in the biotech and healthcare industry.
Great. And you said Kathy?
Catherine.
Catherine. Great. Thanks, Catherine. Anybody else? Okay, good. So let's begin. A manager at an all-hands training looked across the room and talked about her experience of going to church with Rhonda, a black woman receptionist at her foundation that she worked at. And she described it in this way to the room full of people at the foundation. I saw Rhonda at church, and I looked at her, and I said, oh, my God, you're a completely different person. You're a leader. You're in charge here. And Rhonda, in the group session, puts her hands in front of her, puts her head down on her hands as she says this on the desk, and she says, yep, when I come to work, I just put my head down and go to work. What was that? What happened? Why is it? that this person was so clearly in charge outside of work, and that when she came within those walls, symbolically, she just put herself really, you know, at the mercy of the folks that were there and really saw herself so differently. I mean, was it because she was black and most of the organization's leadership was white? Was it because she was an admin person and they didn't see her as a leader? Whatever it was, this organization was clueless to a leader in its midst. A bank puts up a sign outside its doors that says, "Spanish is spoken here." And some days later, a Latino couple walks into the bank. And the people run to the new Spanish-speaking manager, bring her down, and she brings the Latino couple into an office and says, "Hi, welcome. Have you been in before?" And they say, "No." She says, well, why are you coming in now?" And she says, Latino couple says, "Well, we saw the sign that says Spanish is spoken here. Before this, we thought you were a bank for white people." Now, I am sure that this bank did not advertise itself as the best bank for white people on the coast. And I am sure that people working in the bank didn't go around saying, "Yep, we're the best bank for white people." But here again, this organization was absolutely clueless to the perception of the bank by this couple, and I have to presume by other Latinos in the community. And it was costing this bank customers and profits, but they had no idea about this loss. So these are two of the stories in my book, and it's, if it's this easy to miss a leader in our midst or to drive away a large group of customers without even knowing it, then our question for today as coaches is, could we do the same in our coaching? And I'm going to propose that this clueless factor that I talk about in Are You Clueless could easily influence our coaching. I could be clueless as I coach, unaware of assumptions that I might have about how success or action might be influenced by my cultural identity, which may be different from my coaching partner. My coaching partner could be clueless as they manage others, just like the foundation managers were. Or my coaching partner could be operating in a clueless organization or a clueless world. Maybe they work in a bank for white people or a restaurant for men, as we'll hear later on. And their ability to achieve the goals of a coaching arrangement could be highly influenced by that cluelessness. So I want to say we've got some work to do if our coaching is really going to have its intended impact in a multicultural world. So here's an agenda and a couple of objectives for our short hour together. What I would hope is that by the end of the time that you'd be able to name a way to utilize a concept from this session in your coaching. I'm hoping there's some takeaway for you. And then secondly, that you could identify cross-cultural patterns that might clue you into dynamics that could aid your coaching. Those are my two hopes for our session. And so to get there, three primary parts of this discussion I'd like to go into. The first part is this initial segment here about the clueless factor and how it might influence us as coaches. Then I want to just give very quickly some takeaway concepts. You know, cut to the chase before we get to the end, so that if you got to go or if we've got limited time, you know, you can at least get the concepts. And then the third segment I'm going to call Great Moments in Coaching. And I'm saying it like that to exaggerate, of course, but there'll be three phases that I'll suggest we go through in coaching and see if we can apply those takeaway concepts in those three phases. So that's our progression. I'm going to move a little bit quickly through it. So if you've got a question along the way, you know, please try to, if you could note it and come back to it, because we'll get there, all right? So let's talk about this clueless factor. Do we have a...
Tom, one second. Tom, can I just interrupt for 1 second and remind people that they can also post their questions on the Facebook page, too?
Yeah.
And that way we'll be sure to get to them.
That's okay, great.
Thanks.
Thank you. So back to this clueless factor, the base concept here is that we can all be clueless to those different from us. And the culture could influence us as coaches or our coaching partner or the organization that the partner works in. So if that's true, then it behooves us to know a little bit about culture. So I want to just spend a minute on that. Here's a question that I'd just like you to think about for a moment, and I'll come back to you to ask for your input. How do you identify culturally? If you could just think about that for a moment, I'm going to float a definition of culture and then come back to you. So if any of you are able to see the slides that Susie posted, you can look at this definition of culture, which is the fifth slide. But if you can't see it, a working definition of culture we could use: behaviors, ideas, attitudes, values, beliefs, customs, language, and ceremonies of people or group that are transferred, communicated, or passed along. All right? So that's we'll work with that in a moment. So let me ask, for those of you who thought about this question of how do you identify culturally, let me get some input on that. What are some of your answers on that?
African-American.
Thank you, Bill. Okay.
And sorry I'm late to the call. It's Gary. I would say I come from having German parents, first-generation Canadian, white male.
Great. Thanks, Gary.
This is Catherine, Mexican-Italian, and I'm married to a Russian Jew.
Okay. Thanks, Catherine.
This is Susie. I am a on one side first generation American and Jewish. I don't know. I kind of think coaching is a cultural identity piece as well. So I often identify myself as a coach.
Ah, say more there. Why do you say that? That's a cultural identity, Susie.
Well, I find that the culture of those of us in the coaching field, there are similarities. So we tend to be people who want to make a difference, people who want to help, people who have some aspect of teaching, consulting. It just seems to be that there's some common cultural norms in terms of behaviors, ideas, beliefs, et cetera.
Great.
So coaches, you know, so I consider that part of my cultural identity.
Great. Thank you. Anybody else?
I'm a gay Tibetan Buddhist.
Thank you, Dwayne. Good. All right, so leaving it there for a moment. If you look at some of the things we've said, many of them involve nationality. A couple related to religion and one sexual orientation. So we're leaning toward this point that I wanted to make, and it really was brought out by what Susie is saying. If you consider that definition that I gave about values or behaviors getting transferred or passed along, then our definition of culture is very broad. If I think of that definition, I think of, as Gary suggested, male. Men and women are different cultures, if you will, if you use that definition. And so there's a slide up that, if you can see, is called Some Dimensions of Diversity. But for those of you who can't, there's a long list there. Educational background, race, language and accent, sexual orientation, class, religion, physical and mental ability, gender, headquarters versus field, support versus technical or program, age and generation. I've put that up just to suggest that we have lots of different folks that we're coaching who belong to many of these groups, and so it expands our need to have some radar. You know, that, as Susie says, we may have norms as coaches that are similar and that are different from some of the folks we work with. And so that influences how we think, how we behave, maybe how we're treated in some cases. So with this broad definition, I'm just wanting to broaden also our radar as coaches, that I don't think we're just talking about, you know, a person's goals and whether they can achieve them, but we're also talking about what, how some of these other factors may influence how they're received or how they see themselves, right? So I want to have us have that broad definition in mind. And another definition we could use is a definition of cluelessness. And I've given Susie a slide for that, and I'll read that one as well. The way I define it is cultural cluelessness is not knowing what you don't know about cultural identity and its impact, right? So if that's the case, then we've got a big problem here, because if we can all be clueless to culture, if you all accept that premise that I put out there in the beginning, then how can we see its influence as coaches? How do you get to know what you don't know? And that's where I want to go to our takeaway concepts. I think there are some ways that we can see the influence of cultural indifference when you or your coaching partner or its organization, his or her organization, may be blind to those factors, right? So this is somewhat of a challenge. We'll go there. So here's a fairly rapid fire, some of the three takeaway concepts I have in mind for today. The first one, takeaway number one, it's not the culture, it's the patterns. And what I mean by this is there are a lot of, I guess, cultural competence courses that focus on how you adapt to a certain culture or how you operate. So if you go to Saudi Arabia, you know, it behooves you to, you know, learn what some of the customs are in that country and to make some adjustments, right? This is not a session about that. What I'm suggesting is that there are some common cross-cultural patterns to look for, whether the difference we're talking about is sexual orientation, whether it's religion, whether it's generation, and that gives us sort of some handles that we as coaches can use. So Susie's posted the five patterns that I want to suggest for takeaway concept number one. And I'll repeat those again if those of you who are on the line can't see those, but they're on the Leading Coaching Center page. Right, Susie? They're up on the page. So the five are what I would call clueless majorities, insiders and outsiders, accumulated impact, intent versus outcome, and denial. So some quick definitions. Clueless majorities would be the tendency to be unaware of the different experiences of members of groups who are in a minority or who have less clout or who differ from a predominant population, right? That's things that women have said about men for years. They're clueless, right? So there's a societal example. Insiders and outsiders, that would be the occurrence of groups that predominate in organizations or in the society and those that don't. Accumulated impact, that would be the emotional load a person carries from long-time experiences of what some call microaggressions. Somebody says something that they feel is innocuous, but the other person blows up at them because they've been experiencing little slights all day related to that group that they're in. Intent versus outcome, probably familiar to most of you, the communication breakdown that occurs when what you say or do is taken in a completely different way than what you meant. And then lastly, with diversity, denial is the tendency to defend any implication that one may have biases or behaviors that treat members of cultural groups differently, right? So I just want to quickly put those out there as some handles we can use as coaches. I'm going to come back to those in a few minutes when we talk about a couple of case examples and stories, right? Takeaway concept number two, use your radar. So you may know some common ways that differences play out. You know, an example, women feeling like they've stated an idea in a meeting, but nobody listens to it. Then a man says it a few minutes later, and the man gets credit for it in a meeting. All right, that's a familiar one. I don't know, maybe it's old. Maybe that doesn't happen anymore. We could ask the women in the group about that. So maybe a more subtle one might be something like you're working in an organization, you don't see anybody with a visible disability in the organization that you're coaching, whether it's in management or in the halls, except for the person that you're coaching. And that's, you know, something that can sort of raise your radar. It's one of those things that makes you go, you know, because you're wondering, all right, well, what's the impact of that lack of diversity on this person that I'm coaching? So that radar we'll come back to as well when we get into our case examples. Just the idea is don't dismiss your radar for how difference does or doesn't show up. It could be influencing you or your coaching partner. And then takeaway number three, I'll call level with me. By this I mean that individual behavior is embedded in a larger system, and this is what Susie referred to in my introduction. So my success or my network or my impact might be affected by at least three levels of workplace activity. First is the individual level, so my personality or my presence or my interpersonal interactions. These, I think, are familiar to most of us in the coaching arena. We work with folks on how they can achieve their personal goals. We look at what some of their patterns are, see if we can help them toward that goal. But there's also the second level, which I call the group level. It's possible that my group identity, whether it's cultural, whether it's positional in an organization, will affect my ability to succeed. And I think good coaches need to add awareness of that group level to their coaching. So, for example, if my coaching partner is a member of a support group rather than a program or operating group in an organization, how does that affect her reception and credibility in the organization? Or if they're a member of the millennial generation, do they communicate or have expectations that run up against baby boomers or other generations? These are group-level kind of influences. And then the third level is the organizational culture, which also affects my coaching partner. So if 80% of an organization is male, what's the impact of that on my female coaching partner? Is she swimming in a masculine culture, and how do we account for that? Or if I'm male as her coach, am I clueless to her reality, and do I need to enhance my radar for that reality? So for now, just want to have folks remember IGO, individual, group, and organization. And we'll come back to those levels of awareness as we go into this next section of the session. And this is that segment that I'm calling Great Moments in Coaching. I need a drum roll or something behind me. But let me stop there and just see, let's check in and see if there's any questions or comments, because I've kind of been on a roll here for a minute. But any thoughts that people want to bring out before we move into the application of these concepts into the three cases I've got?
Tom, this is Susie. What was the header for the third piece? I know the second one was use your radar, but the piece you were just talking about, I didn't catch the header for that.
Level with me.
Level with me. Ah, thank you. Okay.
The idea of looking at these different levels as we coach.
Yeah.
Anybody else? All right, so I'll go to these phases, and I'm going to ask for some of your thoughts here as we get into the three phases of coaching. I'm going to suggest these for our purposes. I'm sure those of you who coach have, you know, maybe more phases than this, maybe less, but I'll just suggest three that we could use for our purposes. And the three I'm going to suggest are assessing, noticing patterns, and a solutions stage or solutions or shifts, maybe. Assessing, noticing patterns, and solutions. And I want to tell the story of Yvonne. Yvonne was somebody I was coaching, a black woman, and we had, as I would guess most of you who get into coaching, we had started out just focusing on her effectiveness as a leader. She was at a supervisory level, and what some of those challenges were that she faced in her unique situation and how we could better that. So it was, you know, general coaching. We hadn't been focusing on cultural issues. And Yvonne, at some point along the way, you know, a few sessions in, says to me, people tell me I'm unapproachable. So here's takeaway concept number two, use your radar, going off in my head. I'm hearing a ding, 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 or a blip, 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 whatever it is radar does, right, that is familiar to me. And I'm thinking, okay, I've heard a lot of black women tell me that they get that kind of feedback. But the thing is, Yvonne and I haven't talked about that. You know, we don't have it on the plate that we're going to be coaching around diversity issues. And so one of the things that I think is necessary in this assessment phase is that we as coaches do some contracting. And by that I mean, you know, our informal definition of contracting, not some formal written down contract, but that we agree that this is on the table. And so I said to Yvonne, you know, I just want to say something here. I said, we can, if you want to work on that, if you think that there's something at the individual level about you that, you know, exudes unapproachable, we can certainly work on that. I said, let me just say that I don't find you unapproachable. I find you, in fact, quite approachable. So what I want to add to this conversation, this coaching conversation, is that I know a lot of colleagues and people I've coached who are black women who have been described with that word or a word like that. And so what we may be talking about here is not you, but how folks receive you or see you. And that then influences my coaching in a lot different way, that I will talk to her at a much different level. And if we go back to our level concept, we might be working with that group level, rather than trying to fix Yvonne for something that she may not, you know, even be exuding. It may be somebody else's issue. So there's a lot that could happen, as you all know, in the assessing phase. You know, we could look at the goals people have, the circumstances they have, and contracting is just one aspect that I'll cover here. But I'm certain that the five cross-cultural patterns we talked about could be useful as well for everybody's radar. If you're looking at whether a person can achieve those goals or what the circumstances are that they are facing. I'm currently working in an organization, the folks, that it is an 80-20 split on men to women. So, you know, working with women there is a totally different kind of operation than it is working with the men. All right, so that's a little bit about how we could use some of these concepts in the assessment phase. Let me go to the second phase that I mentioned for coaching that I called noticing patterns. And here's where I'm going to ask for a little assistance. This story is the story of Alma. The thing that I think is essential in coaching is noticing patterns in my coaching partner's behavior and attitudes and seeing how those patterns either support them or deter them in their goals. And I'm sure most of you are doing the same kind of thing. You're looking for a pattern that's successful and a pattern that might need to shift. So this noticing patterns phase is the phase where we can really use those five cross-cultural patterns to the hilt, because they will shed some light on what kind of patterns show up for this person that I might be coaching. So let's use another story here. I'm going to read a story from the book to you. It's a short story about Alma. And I want you to imagine that you're coaching the manager in this situation. And in doing so, I want you to remember those five cross-cultural patterns. All right? So I'm hoping you've either got the page in front of you or you noted them, but pick out which ones you think are operating in Alma's story, all right? And just as a reminder, the five are the clueless majorities, intent versus outcome, accumulated impact, denial, and insiders and outsiders, all right? So listen for those patterns as I describe Alma's story to you. Alma works at a hospital. Muslim woman, and she walked in at night for her shift in through the garage, and she felt she was being followed. All right, so here's her story. She goes to the security, the manager of security, to speak to him about her feeling of being followed. So Alma says, I'd like to speak with you about an incident that occurred last week. The manager says, thank you for coming, Alma. How can I help? One of your employees in car 54 followed me through the parking lot. Manager says, I'm sure he didn't mean to follow you. He did, all the way from my car to the entrance. What are you suggesting? I think he saw my headscarf and thought I was a threat, and I'm an employee. Ma'am, I know this employee, and I'm sure he meant no harm. He stayed behind me in the car the whole time, never said a word. I'm sure this had nothing to do with your being Muslim. How can you be so sure? This kind of thing happens a lot. Because we don't profile groups in this department. I also know the employee, and he would never do such a thing. All right, so let's see what you got there. Anybody pick out any of those cross-cultural patterns going on in this story and in the exchange between Alma and the security manager? What did you hear?
Denial.
Okay, and where'd that come up?
Well, the manager, the supervisor of the security, was denying that his employee was doing what she experienced.
Great. Good, Susie. Thanks. What else?
He didn't acknowledge her concern.
Didn't acknowledge her what?
Her concern. He really didn't acknowledge her concern or validate the fact that she had these feelings. I mean, whether or not he believes them has nothing to do with whether or not she felt that way.
Yes. Perfect. Who else? I think we heard another voice. Any more of these patterns that you saw might have been going on?
Tom, this is Susie again. I don't know if accumulated impact was happening, but I'm thinking when Alma said this sort of thing happens all the time. Is that
Perfect.
What you mean by accumulated impact? Okay.
Absolutely. And the other caller's point about not acknowledging that then could put that person in one of our patterns. Anybody pick up on that? He could be landing in the clueless majority area. You know, he's not acknowledging the feelings, may not even be aware of what happens to Alma, in other situations in her life, so he doesn't see the accumulated impact. He could be coming from a clueless standpoint there. Anybody else on this one?
This is Catherine again. I don't know if this applies, but I'm looking at the insider and outsiders and just the comment you read about, I know this guy, he would never do that. So there might be something in there, but I'm not sure that directly aligns with your previous description.
Oh, no, that's beautiful, Catherine. I love it. Yeah, so there's a little network there, you know, that knows each other, and Alma's outside that network. Absolutely. And one of the, you know, I'm sure those of you who've had, you know, some experience with this too, one of the interesting things about that is that in my own experience has been that when I know somebody, I may know them as they act with me, but I've found over the years that I don't necessarily know them completely as they act with people who are different than I am, you know? Okay, good. So this is just a little bit of practice of the patterns. And, I just want to leave it at that for the moment, but I want us just to see that these provide us different angles when we're coaching. You know, it's not necessary to me, although it might be helpful, that we know exactly the ins and outs of Islam. But rather, you know, what I'm saying here is that our approach to coaching is enhanced. If we're coaching the manager, let's say, and we think he might be a clueless majority to the experience of Alma, or that he should clue in to the accumulated impact that she might be feeling. So if you're coaching this person, then you pick up on that accumulated impact. You've got a handle that you can use there and say, well, wait a minute, how would you have had this conversation if you were aware that this is something that has happened to her on a daily basis or, you know, frequently would your conversation with her have been different, right? And, you know, if you like, there's a second conversation in the book that sort of corrects this conversation and has him operate in a way where he is acknowledging, I think, as Catherine says, her feelings. The other possibility here, too, is that we just have the radar on for ourselves, that, you know, we too as coaches might fall into denial. I think a lot of times I have to monitor my own comfort level in situations like this. I may want to say, oh, no, that doesn't have anything to do with you being X, you know, whatever the group is we're talking about. And I have tried to steel myself against doing that, but I know that I have that in my background, that I feel some discomfort in situations like this. And if I project that out, I may be missing something that's real for this person that I may be coaching or that may be having to coach somebody who is experiencing something like Alma did, right? All right, I'm going to move to the third great moment in coaching, the solution stage. We talked about assessment. We talked about noticing patterns. Here's a solutions example. And the scene shifts here. This is a story called The Restaurant for Men. And in this situation, I want you to imagine that you're coaching either the woman in this scenario or her male manager. There's this situation was in a restaurant chain, which I was doing some work. And a female waiter at this restaurant chain wanted to be promoted to what they called a top gun. Top guns are the people who train other waiters, right? And she was told that her performance was good enough, but if she weren't so emotional, she could become a top gun. So she wasn't given the promotion. And she felt this comment reflected a bias against her as a woman, right? So let's go back to that third takeaway concept that Susie had asked me about, level with me. I was saying that a coach with cultural competence needs to be able to do what we call sorting, figuring out what level of organizational dynamics is most at play, either for our coaching partner or the person that's brought up the issue, and then coaching accordingly, you know, keeping that level in mind as you coach. So maybe you're coaching the female waiter in this situation in her desire to move up, or you're coaching her manager. So here's what I'd like you to do. As I tell you about the organization, I want you to separate out what the influencing factors are. What's happening at the individual level? Might be personality traits or interpersonal kinds of things. What might be happening at the group level? Things that relate to the group identities of the players involved. And how might the organizational norms be influencing these folks that you're coaching, right? So here's the context to give you a little bit more information about where this woman was operating. The restaurant is owned by two men and has as its branding strategy a desire to be perceived as a saloon, but with high-quality meals. Male and female waiters wear white shirts, suspenders, and ties. Top waiters become top guns. And there are no female top guns at the chain when this woman applies to be a top gun. All right? So let's do the sorting process here. What do you hear? What are the factors that could be influencing this situation, either in the male, this is a male manager, you know, who's evaluating her, either in the case of the male manager or in the case of the woman? What are the individual factors going on? What are the group factors? What are the organizational? Let's hear a little bit from those of you who heard the context.
This is Catherine. Well, I hear this male-dominated environment. It's also catering to male clientele with the word saloon. You also have this image regarding the fact that they're wearing the white tie, the white shirts and the ties. You've got more of a male orientation there. So So those are the things I picked up.
Great. Thanks, Captain. Okay. How about others?
Yeah, and even the language of Top Gun as the premier position is a very male vernacular.
Don't you love that? I mean, it's changing. You know, we're all seeing female fighter pilots and all that kind of stuff, but it's certainly a male image.
This is Joni. I'll jump in here. So at the individual level, you know, it's really hard to know. I mean, maybe there's an issue here of relativity. So this female waiter is told that she's too emotional. What does that mean, really? Too emotional based on what and whom. So if this is a highly masculinized environment and people are very unemotional, maybe she seems really emotional. So that's the first thing that kind of comes to my mind, is just this whole idea of relativity. Or, again, at the individual level, maybe she is very emotional. Maybe she's, you know, crying all the time, or she flares with her behavior. And so relative to any environment, even, you know, a beauty parlor, she'd be emotional. So no, that's kind of one of the first things that comes to my mind, is what are we scaling against here? That's such a vague term.
I love it. Love that, Joni. That's so great. You know, I love that relative to what's going on in the environment, or, you know, relative to any environment, right? Beautiful. Anybody else? What do you group or individual?
I'll add one more, Tom, and that is something you just said in the commentary was that it's a waiter, and the preponderance to switch roles to what were traditionally masculine names, waiter versus waitress, actress versus actor.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's even the historical, you know, part of it.
I love it. So we're not only talking organizational, we're even one level up from that, Gary, right? Societal or worldwide, I guess.
Right.
Good. All right, yeah. So, you know, this is just a practice, and you know, who knows what the answer is here, but this is great stuff. What we're doing is sorting, and that's the real point of this, I think, for coaching. I mean, if you're coaching this woman who wants to progress, would you consider her too emotional? And we got to think about what Joni is saying there. You know, is she somehow using her emotions ineffectively, maybe impeding her promotion as a trainer? I mean, that could certainly be the case. It maybe that's accurate. And as many of you know, in situations where you are managing someone or you're evaluating someone, you got to be, you know, good Lord, David Goleman's book's been out there for years about emotional intelligence. So if it's an individual level issue, maybe that's something to be worked on, right? But on the other hand, we talked here a little bit in terms of what Susie and Catherine were saying about the male orientation of the organization. So maybe she's seen as too emotional because the whole culture is male, as Joni was mentioning. And the male manager's evaluation of her might be off base because he's overlaying his preference and that of the male culture on how she's acting personally, right? I will tell you, one of the things that we were doing an assessment in this organization, one of the things that just shocked the top managers in this organization was the feedback from women. They were clueless to the fact that women felt like this was an organization that was biased and pushed them into being something that they were not, right? So we're adding this level with me idea, the idea of sorting, to our coaching skills. And we've looked at the stories of Yvonne and Alma and the Restaurant for Men as a way to illustrate our three takeaways for this session. It's not the culture, it's the pattern. So look for the five cross-cultural patterns. Use your radar. You know, track what's going on at a group and organizational level. And then level with me. See what influences are happening for an individual that might not just be about coaching an individual at the individual level. And what that context does, how it influences their success. And I've tried to have us apply those in the assessment, the noticing patterns, and the solution stage. Somebody had a question?
This is Margie. I have a comment. One of the things that I've noticed is that whoever a person is, for example, the person who may be emotional, if they're under stress, which Alma would be working in this organization, that behavior of being emotional or abrasive or whatever the person is becomes intensified.
Uh-huh.
And often shadow coaching is helpful to see how a person that you're coaching is showing up differently in their workday environment.
Interesting. So you've got sort of a reinforcing dynamic there then.
Right.
Huh.
Tom,
I love it.
Susie, I've been pondering a question as I've listened to these stories and thinking about my own coaching. I do a lot of coaching by phone. And, you know, it's easy to have sort of the cultural awareness lens when you have the visual cues of being in an organization and you can look around and see, for example, you know, how many women are there, how many people of color, how many people with visible disabilities based on who you're coaching. But what would you recommend how would we attune our awareness for these kinds of things if it's over the phone, right? Like if I'm hearing a leader complain about one of their difficult employees, I don't think to ask, well, what nationality is that employee? Or, you know, I don't think to ask for the cultural identity of who they're complaining about to see if that's an aspect of what's happening. So how can I apply some of this to phone coaching?
Yeah, great. Yeah. I'll say what I would do, and I'll be interested in what others say. I think that's where contracting comes in, first of all, Susie, is that I might have to say, you know, and where radar comes in. If I start hearing things that are familiar to me about, like somebody says, people say I'm unapproachable, then I might ask, you know, we haven't broached the cultural side of this, but let me just put this out there and play this out. Is it possible that there could be a gender dynamic going on here or whatever the issue might be? And I think the question is the better way to put it rather than to say, you know, I think this is going on, because I think there's a lot of sort of boomerang backlash when we suggest that this is what's happening, you know. And so that's where I think the sorting process comes in. I say, all right, well, this could be, you know, an individual level kind of thing related to your personality. But let me add this group level issue, or what's the organizational climate like? Is that influencing how you are operating at this point? Let's talk about that.
Very good. Yeah, that's good. Thank you. And I think it also has to do with sort of, you know, because you as a coach are steeped in this awareness, because this is so much of your work that you're passionate about, I think one of the things that the rest of us have to do is sort of turn on that antenna, right? So I wouldn't necessarily listen from these cultural patterns at play or these levels at play. And so that's definitely something that I'm taking away from this call, is that I'm going to be attuned in a different way. You're enhancing my awareness in how I listen to my clients and listening from these different levels and from these cultural patterns, because, you know, when they're obvious or when my radar picks up on them, I do bring it out, but I don't always look for that. So thank you, because now I'm having a broader awareness with which to go into what I listen to my clients from.
Yeah, I mean, that's the hope for me. I mean, I think the drift in coaching, and this is probably overstating it, but I think the drift in coaching is more towards the individual level. And so this is just a plea to add to our repertoire, you know, expand it a little bit and have that on the screen, not necessarily to say that it's true, you know, but that we expand ourselves in that way.
Yeah.
How about others? I know I'm kind of you know, cram this in to fit it within the hour. And so please feel free to follow up with me, you know, by calling or emailing. You know, my email is tfinman@aol.com. Or if you must, by buying the book at ruclueless.com. But But if you've got some other questions now, please let me know. What else is
going on? Well, Tom, it's Gary. It wasn't necessarily a question, but I haven't had such a laugh in a telecall in a long time. It's when I hear how clueless, and I'll put myself out there as a man, how clueless we are. That saloon example, I had to go on mute because I was just howling at it's, you know, every, and then they didn't see it?
Yeah.
Hello?
It's amazing, Gary. And, you know, on the other hand, just last week, I stepped in it so badly at a client that I just thought, okay, at least, you know, at the very least, this is proof of my title, you know, that I'm clueless too, and it still goes on and on. You know?
I have a question.
Well, and I
go ahead, Catherine.
Sure. I have a question just in terms of that perception of cluelessness from a gender perspective. Do you find that women have a different antenna in terms of fit versus not fitting differently than men? I'm not expressing this well. Do you feel that women are more sensitive to the fact that what they may bring up is not in alignment with what a man might need?
I'm sorry. Go ahead and finish, Catherine. I think I interrupted.
I'm struggling to try to put it into words. It's not really formulated. So take it from where I left it.
Okay. One thing I will say is that I do think, and I know a couple of folks on this call who were equally could talk about this, that those who are in the outsider position, whether it's a woman, you know, a gay man, you know, Alma, Muslim in a Christian society, are always clearer. They're able to see what's going on more so than I am if I'm in the majority position. And there's always the possibility that, you know, a person in that group may go over the line and see it too much, you know. That's why I think we need to be agile sorters, because we can't really know, but we can put it out there. And I do think that women will see things in that I will miss many times that I think are extremely valuable for me to see, you know. So I think that's what makes the leveling, you know, level with me concept so important.
Thanks.
Anybody else?
So Tom, tell people. Oh, go ahead.
I just have a comment about the dimensions of diversity. One thing that I noticed that shows up a lot would be people, there are different ways of communicating with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And this list that you have just made me realize how much that shows up.
Yeah. Definitely. You know, and that list, I think, could keep going, Margie. We could have
of... Absolutely.
The limits of the PowerPoint slide.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Well, Tom, before we close, can you tell people where they can find out more? I've posted areyouclueless.com on the Leading Coaches Center page, but where else would you like to send people?
That's good. I mean, for any that are interested in, you know, more about these concepts, there's a little bit on the site, you know, and of course the book has more. And then if you're interested, Susie mentioned there's another piece that a partner and I are doing at www.lifelineconsulting.com, and that's a different topic than this, but it's about how people handle pressure in the workplace, which has become a big thing among my clients. So those are the two websites to go to. If you go to clueless.com, you can see a little video that I did on the Latina Voices program in Houston that gives it a little bit of a gist of the book, and that's at the media page.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thank you. And Tom, I'm so just honored that you were able to take the time to share this wonderful body of work with us and your insights and your perspectives. And I learn something in every conversation with you. So I'm really thrilled that you were able to share your wisdom with the Leading Coaches Center. And I'd love to just open it up to any final thoughts anybody wants to share before we wrap.
Thank you. It was great. I enjoyed it a great deal. I appreciate you taking the time, and I appreciate your coordination of this.
Thank you.
I thought it. Pardon me. I thought it was a great session, and I think one of the big, aspects of it was you're pointing out the levels that can be attended to during coaching, which is something that I think not many people think about.
Thank you, Bill.
I love the way that you skillfully blended stories with case studies and examples, as well as the talking points on the PowerPoint.
Oh, great. Thank you. You know, I'm very glad to get this feedback, because as those of you who've done these teleseminars before, it's very hard to know what the reception is out there.
Yeah, the stories are great, Tom. I love that you make it real with stories, because you hear different levels of what's going on and you understand the concepts better through the stories. So it's great.
Thank you.
Well, thank you to everybody for your time today. And I don't yet have the next mastermind call booked, but you can watch for it on the Leading Coaches Center. I'll announce it once we have it booked. And Tom, thank you so, so much for joining us today. And thank you to everybody for taking the time out of your day to be here. And I look forward to seeing you guys at the Leading Coaches Center.
And Susie,
yay,
this gets posted on the Coaching Center, is that right?
Pardon me?
This gets posted at the Leading Coaching Center?
It's posted at the Leaders Clubhouse, and I will post the link to where to get to it directly on the Leading Coaches Center, yes.
Great, thank you. Thanks so much for your help.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Take care. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye.